Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, where we help you manage your growing engineering team. Through expert interviews, we help you navigate the challenges of leading, hiring, growing, and nurturing your tech team to deliver the value your customers demand. Brought to you by AgilityFeet.com, experts in staffing engineering teams in Latin America for clients globally.
Stop beating up your project managers. You know, it's been fashionable within the Agile community to look at project managers and badmouth them and say, hey, you know, they're responsible for all the problems that we have. Here's a statistic: 80% of change efforts succeed when they're backed by middle management, and that includes project managers. So project managers, program managers, leads, these are all people who are crucial to our success. And so I think one thing that needs to change is this vilification of people in middle management.
Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, the podcast for leaders of growing software engineering teams. I'm Aaron Syme, as always, here with my co-host, David Alfaro. Great to see you again, David. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, thank you. I'm just enjoying my coffee. It's quite early here in Costa Rica, but all good. I have enough coffee to go about my day.
Excellent. Well, I think this is going to be a really interesting conversation, so I do encourage our listeners, pull up a good cup of Costa Rican coffee or whatever you have at hand so that you're really focused, because there's a lot of interesting stuff that we talked about in this episode with Sanjeev Augustine, and he talked with us about managing for value delivery and the difference between like a PMO, project management office, and a value management office. So David, what did you think about this conversation? What struck you? What was interesting to you?
Well, there is something very particular about Sanjeev. He went a step further from product management, and he went ahead and said value management. So he's proposing to move from a PMO, a project management office, to a value management office. I think, I mean, that's courage. Really, I mean, I really like that, and I really enjoyed how he put all that context when you are concerned about growing, how you scale, and he gave very interesting insights about that. I really recommend this episode about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think terminology matters, right? What we call different jobs, what we call different roles and steps in our process really sets the tone for how we approach it. And so, yeah, I like that too, that emphasis on value in this is so important to Agile methodologies in general. And the way Sanjeev calls that out in the VMO really helps to emphasize that. I thought it was a good conversation here, a healthy reminder not to vilify that project management role, which we do have a tendency historically in Agile to do, but we really need something like that role, regardless of how we change it or change the name of it. We still need someone to help coordinate that and make sure that we are delivering that value. And if we can just if a VMO helps that role to be more focused on the constant delivery of value to our customers, then that's going to go a long way to reducing the tension between engineering management, between business management, and with our customers. So I think there's a lot of great concepts in this, and I really enjoyed the conversation with Sanjeev as well. So without further ado, let's get to our interview with Sanjeev Augustine. I'm very pleased to welcome Sanjeev Augustine, who David and I have worked with in multiple ways over the last decade or so. When I was an Agile consultant, I did most of my work with LifeSpeed clients, and I personally learned a ton from being a part of his team for several years. If you don't know him already, then allow me to tell you a little bit more. Sanjeev is the founder and CEO of LifeSpeed, a world-leading Agile training and consulting company, and an executive consultant and trusted advisor on business agility. He was co-founder of the Agile Alliance's Executive Forum and the Agile Leadership Network. He's the author of many books, including Managing Agile Projects, Scaling Agile, and From PMO to VMO, Managing for Value Delivery. Thanks so much for joining us today, Sanjeev.
Thank you, Aaron. It's a pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity. Aaron, I have to admire your product placement over there for PMO to VMO.
That's right. For those of us watching on YouTube, over my shoulder here, this is a copy of Sanjeev's latest book, which I definitely recommend. And we'll talk quite a bit today, I think, about VMOs about value management offices. So maybe let's start there, Sanjeev, with that title from PMO to VMO. So define for our listeners, what is a VMO and how is it different from a project management office?
Yeah, thanks for that question. So let's start with the work that needs to be done in today's environment. You know, things have changed radically over the last 2-3 years. Certainly, what has happened with the onset of the pandemic is an acceleration, if you will, of the demise of the project model. And when I say project model, it's also associated with the waterfall model, where we have large batches. We go through requirements analysis, design, development, test, and we have customers left out of that cycle, and we have crappy products, we build the wrong thing, and dissatisfied customers. Now, not all of that is the fault of the project model, but modern day product development and modern day even project management drives us in the direction of small batch delivery, tightly coupled with customer-centric design, customer-centric delivery, right? So the work for management in this environment is to support small agile teams that are working in close collaboration with their customers. So for us, value management then becomes, what can we do as leaders at the level above the teams? If we're indeed enabling our teams or supporting our teams, our agile teams, of course, what do we need to do, right? And so it boils down to a combination of some lean portfolio management and some adaptive governance. That's what we call managing value. Lean portfolio management, managing the funnel of work that's going to the teams, and then adaptive governance, which is making sure that we have the appropriate controls in place, the teams are supported, and our organizations are supported with the appropriate controls. So with that lens, lean portfolio management and adaptive governance, we look at the existing constructs, and the existing construct is usually a PMO, a project management office. And we say, well, how can PMOs or middle management support this new model? And that becomes the transition from here's a project model with a PMO to here's a value management model with a value management office. And typically, there's a transition involved when the PMO no longer becomes the gatekeeper or process police. But now the people in the PMO, the value managers, now become enablers of an agile adoption, an agile transformation, and of the agile mindset. So one specific example I can give you is in a historical legacy model, we would quite typically have what's known as a project book of work. And a project book of work is nothing but a mega list of all the projects that we're trying to deliver. Now, just like a requirements document, there's no proper prioritization of that book of work. It's too big, it takes too long. And so our portfolio gets clogged up as well. Now, if you take that and say, okay, this is what the PMO is doing in the old days, how can the people in the PMO, value managers, now support agile teams? We say now we can create a portfolio backlog. We can use an agile tool or a lean tool, like a portfolio Kanban, and we can create a funnel so that we can systematically break the work, those projects down into MMPs, minimum marketable products. We can work with our customers to prioritize those MMPs, and we can funnel that work. And as our teams move along in a customer-centric way, we can either validate those MMPs or invalidate those MMPs. So that's an example of what a PMO might have been doing in the older legacy model and what a VMO can do to support agile teams in our modern model.
Aaron, but something that I like about this is that there is a strong tendency in the PMO world to do the process for the sake of the process.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is not that that doesn't cool. I mean, it is not that that couldn't happen in the agile world. Mm-hmm. Is that it is easier to get into that trap in the PMO world. Something that I like very much about the way you talk is that the VMO, it's value first.
Yes.
So it is not the process or the agile process for the sake of the process. Yeah. It is the process for the sake of the value. Yeah. I love that very much. I like it. Yeah.
Thank you very much. So I want to comment on that. One of the things that that we can look at and add to what you just said, David, is it's not just the project management community or the agile community that's been guilty of being right. a process police, if you will, because you can have people who are following Scrum to the letter, Scrum Masters, without understanding the intent behind the Scrum practices and the Scrum principles, right?
Right.
So there again, I think one of the transitions need to be a transition from the outputs to outcomes. So whether we are a project manager and we're looking at outputs, the waterfall deliverables, or a Scrum Master and we're looking at Scrum deliverables, that's not, you know, that's not the be all and end all. The reason we have those outputs is so that we can achieve business outcomes, customer satisfaction, reduce costs, mm-hmm. increase value. And so whether we are dealing with project managers or helping them make the change, or whether we're dealing with Scrum Masters and helping them make the mindset change, what we would like to do with the VMO is to focus very sharply on outcomes and say, these outputs you're producing, this code, these features, really, they're there to move the needle on these objectives and key results, some business outcomes, et cetera.
So it's a lot more than really just a change in title, kind of like going from a traditional project manager to a Scrum Master. It's not just a title change. It's a mind shift as well. And that's really the same thing here, right? From a PMO to a VMO.
Absolutely.
So beyond that sort of mind shift for the individuals in that value management office, what else do you need to do in a company to organize that company around value streams? Are there other budgeting management processes that need to adapt?
Yeah. So I'll be a little controversial here.
I love that. Please.
Yeah. Stop beating up your project managers. You know, it's been fashionable within the Agile community to look at project managers and badmouth them and say, hey, you know, they're responsible for all the problems that we have. Here's the statistic: 80% of change efforts succeed when they're backed by middle management, and that includes project managers. So project managers, program managers, leads, these are all people who are crucial to our success. And so I think one thing that needs to change is this vilification of people in middle management. Right now, especially with things like the Great Resignation going on, and there's certainly fault to be seen on the part of management. But I think we're too easy, we're too quick, if you will, to assign blame to middle management when what really needs to change is the system behind what's happening over there. Can we change the system, which is the lean principle, and not so, you know, sort of take out these ad hominem attacks on the people that are trying hard to do their jobs well.
It should never be controversial to say, let's stop vilifying somebody based on their job title. But I understand why that is still kind of a controversial statement. But I think it's a really important one to make. I appreciate it, Sanjeev.
It's been around. When I went to my first Scrum class, the trainer came in and said, if you're a project manager, put your hands up. I put my hand up. All of you are fired. And so some of that started with the folks who have been around for a long time.
Well,
and
of course,
went on to massage that and say, well, it's your job that's changing. But there's something controversial when you ask people to put their hands up and then publicly.
Well, and the truth is, I mean, I haven't met a project manager, a traditional project manager, that really, really doesn't want to deliver value.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely. So it is not that they have a different human nature that the Agile people. it's not that.
yeah, hindered by the system that they work in a lot, which is I think an important thing. It reminds me of a comment. I was listening to your podcast, Sanjeev, the Agile Caravanserai, and you had Johanna Rothman on in one of the episodes. And she talked about the realization at some point over the last 20 plus years of the Agile movement that you couldn't just fix a project team by giving them Scrum or whatever Agile, and then expect the organization to change. And there was a point there in the Agile movement where that was kind of realized that it's not just about educating the team. Something has to happen at the organizational level as well, which I think is a lot of what you're addressing in this book, right?
Absolutely, yes. And so what we're addressing in this book is two things, right? One is the middle management layer using the value management office. And there is another one that is actually there in Scrum at Scale, is the executive action team. So a middle management group, the value management office, working with an executive group, like an executive action team. And those two have to work in tandem as well to change the system.
One of the roles of a traditional project management office is measurement, I believe, right? And kind of looking at metrics across the organization and around delivery and stuff. So what sort of metrics does a value management office measure?
Yeah, so that's a great sort of follow-up question on what we just talked about, and that's establishing objectives and key results. So these are the things that came from Andy Grove at Intel, right? The whole movement around OKRs. And a value management office, a VMO, can work with an executive action team to set in place at the very top business-focused objectives and key results, OKRs. Right? Now, if you look at it, you would say, you would think that this is reasonably common, but it's actually not. And executive teams may or may not be familiar with how to set objectives, proper objectives and key results in place, and then not just put them in place, but manage their business to those OKRs. And we're talking about, again, moving from those outputs to the outcomes. And if we are indeed going to manage to outcomes, how do we quantify those? And then the way to quantify them is using OKRs. Our value management office or VMO can help our executive teams identify those OKRs, put them in place, and then adjust them quarterly as needed, and then help the executive action team steer the business according to the results of those OKRs on an ongoing basis. So that's a big change. And it's a significant one, and it actually works remarkably well when we can get the VMO helping the executives capturing strategy. Because you hear, you know, people will lament this, and you go to a bookstore or go to the Amazon and the digital bookstore, and there are probably 100 books that lament that there's a disconnect between strategy and execution. Well, here it is. There's a strategy is defined on a mountaintop. It's defined in these vague terms and in some vision kind of thing. So the best way to link strategy to execution is using OKRs, and the best group that we believe can help agile teams stay aligned with those OKRs and contribute to the business line, business and contribute to the bottom line is by using those OKRs.
So they're helping the engineering team to kind of envision, you know, when if the business side is pushing them harder to deliver more velocity, to shorten cycle time in a Kanban team, or, you know, some of those sorts of project or team related metrics you might think about in an agile process. This is really about helping them connect, you know, why is that important to those overall business objectives, to the amount of value that's being delivered to customers, and better communicating that, right?
Absolutely. You mentioned Joanna Rotman, and she's written on several books. I think over 20 books is quite remarkable, right? And one of those books is a book on portfolio management. And one of her basic premises of portfolio management is when you start and you say, here's an initiative, she said, the best question and the most important question should be, should we do this work at all?
Right.
and if the answer is no, we have just saved ourselves, you know, money, time, resources, what have you. And so similarly, when we start to say a VMO can link strategy to execution by helping the establishment of OKRs, our product managers, our product owners can now look at those OKRs and say, at every time we look at an epic or a feature or stories, let's bounce that back, or let's align that back to our objectives and key results, and ask the question, should we do this at all?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so speaking of things that often come up as a debate of should we be doing this at all, let's talk about technical debt. You know, it's a common challenge in teams, especially new to agile methods, and I struggle with how do I write a user story that, you know, when right. I need some technical debt addressed in the system, and do our customers see that as valuable? Do they see that system upgrade? So how does a value management office address technical debt or sort of priority requests from the engineering team? How do they balance that side?
Yeah, and I want to sort of take that back to a higher level, because I talked about earlier how the work of the Agile VMO falls into two major categories. One is the portfolio management, lean portfolio management, if we talked a little bit about that. The other side of that is adaptive governance. And so I want to talk a little bit more about that now. So There's an acronym that has come up through our client work, and I'll share that with you. It's CARLA, C-A-R-L-A. It's a little sort of mnemonic to help us remember some of the critical right. functions. So C is for compliance, A is for audit, R is for risk, L is for legal, and A is for architecture. Right, so CARLA. And these are obviously the things that need to be considered. Some of them at the, they need to percolate down to the team level, but a lot of these, a lot of times these things are decided and need to be driven above the team level. You know, teams are not going to decide what they're going to comply with or not, or audit or risk or legal.
Right.
And even architecture, there's some, there's definitely a place for emergent architecture. But if you're looking at an efficient, modern microservices-based architecture, we need some standards over there, right? So a VMO can then say, all right, let's work with whatever the group is. Is there an architecture group? Is there a DevOps group? A lot of times, you know, we sort of move that into this CI/CD, DevOps, sort of continuous deployment thing, pipeline. And then where does technical debt fall into this? Right? So there's a larger scheme of, we don't just have functional stories, but there may be other things that need to be addressed, architecture, compliance, audit, risk, and those will make their way to the portfolio backlog, aided and abetted by the VMO, and then passed on to product owners and product managers to decide when to work on them. And the VMO can be an advocate of teams to actually aggressively deal with, aggressively and proactively deal with technical debt. Because sometimes product owners and product managers may not completely understand and appreciate how important it is to pay down technical debt on an ongoing basis and not let it build up just like any other debt, to the point that it comes back and bites us in a big way.
Absolutely.
So an example of that is, like, let's say we have a project going on, and that project suddenly, for some reason, it's getting difficult to manage, in the sense that every new user story is getting more time to get complete, and it is getting, every user story is more and more expensive to complete. Even though if you look at it from outside, it should not be that expensive, but it's becoming more expensive and more expensive. So that happens suddenly. For some reason, we didn't pay attention to that now, for whatever, let's say, valid reason, I don't know. When that happens, I think what you're saying, if that is happening in that project, now it is time for another project and to put that into the portfolio and address it entirely as a project by its own merits. Is that how you say?
Yes, except for the word project, right? So okay. I'm going to go back to I know both of you are, I don't want to use the word old, though I guess we're all...
It's fair. Go ahead.
Old XP guys, right? Extreme programming guys, right. As am I, you know, and, you know, one of the guests that I had on the Agile Caravanserai is Kent Beck, and he, you know, waxed eloquent about a lot of the stuff that's happening. So I think, and I really believe, and I strongly urge anybody on an Agile VMO to become familiar with some of the techniques from extreme programming or XP, and specifically with spikes, right? So David, what you just described to me would be a spike. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It, not a project, but a spike that we could feed into the portfolio backlog and there are, you know, funnel that out to different teams into their product backlogs. So spikes are part and parcel of XP. You know, we know how to do them. We know how to experiment and time box them and pay down technical debt. I'm just amazed in 2022 that more Agile teams don't know about them and are not using them.
Right.
So the other place is, and David, you talked about a situation where things have been progressed and suddenly the team realizes, or they're getting blindsided. I would say we need to be more aggressive about running experiments upfront, even before we start a project, or if you have a product and a new release of the product, let's run experiments on our architecture. Do we have the best architecture to support the next release of a product or the next project? And let's run some experiments. So one of the examples I can give you for the recent client was that they were dealing with some different sort of signature platforms. And they got to the end of a release and they said, oh, shoot, we really have found out now that we should have used box.com. Well, had they followed this process that we were talking about, they could have had experiments, spikes at the beginning in the initial discovery stage before they started any development, and sussed that out early. Right? And how much money and time and waste would they have saved? Because they had to come back and do that anyway. So it was a learning, and they put it in place, and it's all good. It all worked out good. So now every time they start a new release or they start anything, they'll run a little bit of discovery using spikes, including technical spikes.
Right. So, and that implies that something that I really like about Agile in general is that what you have is a backlog of OKR, I think. I mean, from a company perspective, what you establish at the end of the year, let's say, it's a backlog. And the nice thing about a backlog is that you work in priorities. Maybe you don't consume the whole thing, but it will grow because now you have a spike that you didn't have before. But the nice thing about the backlog is that you're consuming the OKRs in order, because and that order is determined by the value that you deliver and the money that comes after it. I like that very much.
Yeah, thank you. So the alignment with the OKRs is key. And I would challenge the notion that the backlog will grow. I think the backlog will actually shrink because we'll find out more work that we don't need to do and more work that is not valuable to the customer. And then it becomes a question of, can we empower both our technical teams and our product owners and product managers to terminate stuff and clear that backlog?
Right.
I love I love pointing out of discovering work that we don't need to do, right? That's one of the superpowers of a really collaborative, really agile team, is discovering waste before they implement that waste, right?
Sure. Sure.
So we talk about different things at the portfolio and how we interact with the teams, and a lot of what we like talk about on this podcast as well is around scaling tech. So does a VMO concept, does it fit best in any particular scaling methodology, or how do you see that in the sort of pantheon of methodologies out there?
So, Aaron, you're taking us into dangerous territory when it comes to religious terminology.
It's the controversial part of the podcast again.
Pantheon. Yeah. So here's a word that I'll use. I am an orthodox guy and not a religious guy. And there's a distinction that I won't cover here. And by orthodox, I mean it is sticking carefully and cogently to the Agile principles, mm-hmm. Fundamental Agile principles, Agile Lean principles. And as such, I don't support any one methodology, right? I think the best implementation is something that we had back in the Declaration of Interdependence that came out of the Agile Leadership Network, is that the best methodologies are the ones that are designed to be situationally specific. Mm-hmm. So that might mean that we start with Scrum, but we'll fine-tune Scrum to match our situation, or we'll do Scrum at scale, or we'll embed Scrum into scaled Agile framework. But even there, we're not going to mindlessly implement Scrum and or say for any other methodology without looking at the business context. Now, David has picked up on that alignment with the OKRs. Well, the OKRs can also drive our situationally specific implementation of the methodology. So back to your question, Aaron, the Agile VMO, a value management office, if you think about it, is just a group of people. It's a team of teams that's working in conjunction with executives and with teams. And they're pulling together the work that needs to be done. And that can happen in SAFe, in the scaled Agile framework. It can happen in disciplined Agile. It can happen in Less or Scrum at scale. Now, in the book, we cover how you can use this particular construct both with disciplined Agile as well as SAFe. So it's methodology agnostic.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, at the risk of mentioning another term here that could be quasi-religious for some, you mentioned something in the book called the Six Sigma paradox, which I thought was interesting and almost counterintuitive. And it's this idea that, a quote from the book here, that a VMO has to minimize process variability, slack, and redundancy by building variability, slack, and redundancy into our organizations. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
And here are we risk going off into the obscure and the arcane.
Excellent.
But for the learners in the group and the folks who've been long tenured in the industry, so when you've been around as long as we have, Aaron, you know, you pretty much encounter everything. And one of the things that I had encountered earlier on, which is very sort of eye-opening to me, was the whole notion of lean, right? How you can use lean thinking as sort of a grandfather type lens for everything that we do in Agile, right? And I'm talking about the Toyota version of lean, right? So this is the, you know, the TPS, the Toyota production system, and then the Toyota way as it's applied to management. Well, everything we do in Agile, it has its roots in lean, right? So for example, Kaizen, good change, lean, well, that's a retrospective in Scrum or any Agile method. Right? The Kanban board, well, that's ubiquitous now. And well, guess where it came from? It's from the Toyota production system, right? However, we also have this thing called Lean Six Sigma. And you know, having been certified in Lean Six Sigma back in the day and going into depth and trying to understand it, I wanted to understand, because in those days, it's like, well, Agile, yeah, we can do it with Lean Six Sigma. You don't need Agile. But Lean Six Sigma has its roots in predictable manufacturing. And there's a level of standardization that's driven by Lean Six Sigma that actually is harmful and should not be applied to Agile methods, because what we want is that discovery. We actually want to color outside the lines. So we don't necessarily want a control group or this thing, right? Except for some things. There are some things that need to be standardized. And we have to decide what those are. And that's what this thing is saying in a sort of a philosophical Zen-like thing. It's like, we have to decide what needs to be standardized. And if we standardize things at too low a level, that's going to be harmful to the team. Right? That's going to stifle innovation. That's going to stifle creativity. That's going to stifle the delivery of business value. If we standardize at too high a level, that's going to create waste and redundancy and take out any sort of efficiencies that we can accrue from our process. So our job as methodologists, our job as management, our job as mindful implementers of these methodologies is to figure out within our organizations, within our Agile centers of excellence, within our Agile VMOs, what to standardize that will deliver the best results. Because we want to eliminate waste, redundancy, and other kind of things that come from non-standardization. At the same time, if you standardize at too low a level, then we're going to create and stifle the innovation and the productivity of the teams themselves. So it's this, you know, Zen thing that says, well, that's not right and that's not wrong, but we have to figure out where to draw that line. And that's unfortunately a hard thing to grasp in today's world. I think people are looking for simple answers. There's like, tell me what to do. I just want to do Scrum, or I just want to do Safe, or I just want to do Discipline Agile. Well, yes, you can do that at the level one, like the Shuhari, right? If you're at the Shu level, yes, you follow the rules as they. But assuming we've all been around and assuming the people who are driving the implementation of a methodology understand and they're at the re level, what we understand is a balance. And then we have to figure out where that line is. So that's the Six Sigma paradox. And I found this in some obscure book, some, you know, I don't know, 20 years ago, where the Six Sigma guys themselves are saying, don't standardize at too low a level. It's going to hurt you.
Interesting. Oh, that's great.
Do you have an example of that, Sanjeev? I mean, just for the audience, just to be
sure.
Clear.
User stories. Should you standardize them or not? You tell me.
Good example. Love it.
Without a single answer.
Yes. Without a single answer. There you go.
Right. I would say within the team, you should standardize them, but not across teams, perhaps, in the organization, right?
And even so, you will have to revise that constantly. I mean, you got a standard, and then you give it a while, and you see if that works or not, and then you change it.
And David, you bring up an important point. Any standard has to be a living standard.
Right.
Because as circumstances change, tools change, processes change. So if you are defining a standard at whatever level, we have to be prepared to adjust that standard as things change.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where the VMO can come in and help with that and help the team or the team of teams across over time to adjust where the right level of that standardization is across the organization.
I'll give you another easier one, velocity. Mm-hmm. The answer, should that be the standard measure?
Well, definitely not if you've got an organization that's a combination of Scrum and Kanban teams, as many organizations are, right? You can't standardize a single metric.
Yeah. And should you be comparing velocity across teams?
Between teams, no.
No.
At all.
Right. No, and that's one of those things the VMO has to convince executives of, right? Yeah. Is that this doesn't mean anything compared across teams.
Well, but that's a great example. If we are not using a standardized metric like velocity, or at least velocity doesn't make sense to compare between teams, then it brings at the important point of, well, then what is the standard that we should use to measure progress? And I will argue that something that is as close to the OKRs as possible.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So this one's also, if you look at the theory, it's very consistent. Velocity is a measure of output. Useful to the team, but not useful to the business.
Right.
Right? And so OKRs are business outcomes. We should be measuring to those. So yes, velocity, great. Teams can use it to self-improve and look at it, but should not be used across team and should never be used as a management cudgel. Because guess what? There's an easy way to double your velocity. And you guys know this? It comes for all the, you know, you guys remember back in the day, there was a lines of code measure,
right?
As a developer. And programmers found out a way to game that system. It was copy and paste. So right. Just fudge the estimates. So you can double your velocity by doubling your estimates.
Sure.
And we're dealing with intelligent people here.
Yeah. Yeah, and any system can be gamed, right? Value is a little bit harder to game.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been really fascinating, Sanjeev. Really appreciate your time. I have one last question on my part. A lot of the audience that we speak to are teams that are trying to scale up, mm-hmm. and certainly this, you know, you've seen many agile teams and agile enterprises try to scale, I imagine, with a mix of success and failure along the way. So if you imagine that, I'm an engineering team lead with 5 or 10 people in my engineering team now, we've got product market fit, we've got funding lined up, things are looking great, except now management has told me to bump up to 40, 50 people, because that seems to be what we need to do. You know, we need to dramatically grow the team in order to tackle this huge backlog of hopefully of value, not projects, that we need to work on. In your experience in seeing teams try to scale, you know, where does that engineering leader or that team begin? What are the biggest mistakes maybe that they can do in trying to scale dramatically that that they should avoid?
Yeah. So this one is actually a favorite one of mine, because I see some of my colleagues out in the agile space just giving trite answers. It's like every time they're asked, should you scale? They say, well, don't. And I think that's both trite and irresponsible. Right? You can't tell a group of people or an organization that is being pressured to scale up to handle their business, don't. Right? So it's a simplistic answer to say, don't scale. So if we're doing our jobs well, life is about scaling. Life is about changing. And scaling doesn't mean we scale up. It could be scaled sideways to do things differently. So the answer that I would provide is scale organically, right? Not mechanistic. Right? We talk about an organic model, and I'm going to go off into a little arcane theory over here as well, versus a mechanistic model. But underlying all of Agile methods is the complex adaptive systems theory. You guys know this, and Jeff Sutherland has talked about it, Jim Highsmith has talked about it. And each one of our groups, including your team, is a complex adaptive system. And in way back in my first book, 2005, I talk about how you can scale. And this is a term that I use, borrow from my friend Bob Payne, who was my original coach, and of course, is a member of our company. And Bob had this term. He said, don't look at dividing and conquering. Instead, conquer, then divide. So if we have teams, some of what you're the situation you're bringing up, Aaron, is pretty typical. It's like, well, we need to scale. How many people do we need? How many teams do we need? Do we need 40 people? Do we need four teams? That's the wrong answer, right? In my mind, we're not. And the other wrong answer is to say don't scale. Right? If the question is how do we scale, so scaling organically means let's bring a team of people together. Let's say we're starting off our agile transformation. You get one or two teams. These teams come together. They go through the Tuckman model of team formation. They go through forming, storming, norming, performing, and they form a high-performance team. They've conquered. Let's keep them together, right? Now, let's see if we can take a few people, or not the key people, but a few people from the team, and now seed and create another team, right? So the model I covered in my first book is actually fairly common from W.L. Gore and Associates, right? If you know the innovative company. That's what they do. They say they set a size constraint. I think it's like 250 people in a particular office. And every time they go beyond that and they need to go beyond 250 people, they start another office. So what we need to do is to create a new team and spin that up. Now, our VMO and other groups that are looking at consistency and architecture and governance, common governance, can, of course, govern how that happens and who goes under the team and make sure the teams are, newer teams are following the same processes and stuff. But let's grow these teams one at a time or two at a time. We shouldn't look at saying, well, we need four teams. Let's spin them all up, because that's just a recipe for chaos. Absolutely. So scale organically. And there's also, if people want to check it out, there's the fractal model of scaling, where we look at life, you know, the patterns that we have in life, including our teams, as fractals.
I love it. Thank you, Sanjeev. Yeah, the conquer and then divide is a great phrase too. I'll have to talk to Bob more about that sometime as well. David, do you have any final questions for Sanjeev, or what is your kind of takeaway from this conversation today?
Yeah, well, I loved very much the and Sanjeev, maybe it is my takeaway, but I want to get some confirmation from you. Like, maybe I'm wrong. It is that I love the idea of growing the company by first establishing a value stream. Mm-hmm. And once you have that value stream, then you can find better any way that you choose to scale is going to be easier, I think. I mean, it's but if you establish that and to establish a VMO that is going to take care of that, and you follow the processes that focus on value delivery, I will say that scaling is going to be less painful than yeah. anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to jump in on that, David, because that brings us again back to our lean foundation. So our lean organizations do everything driven by the customer, right? And so if you're looking at organizing our work and we're looking at organizing our systems and our processes around our work, well, they need to be organized around the customer. So for us, making that translation is not a dichotomy, it's the same thing, right? A value stream, we align with customer journeys. So if you look at who our customers are, and we identify those customer journeys, and then we prioritize those customer journeys, and the customer journey just then feeds straight into our value stream, right? It's a lean technique to do value stream mapping, but that's not in opposition. It's in complete alignment with starting with the customer, figuring out what's customer-centric design, designing a customer journey, institutionalizing that customer journey, and then figuring out what the value stream to support that journey is. And then doing everything that we do around those customer journeys. Now, so one example from a recent client that we worked with was that they had identified 7 customer journeys slash value streams, but they only prioritized 3 of those for a particular year. So it's like, yeah, we have all these customer journeys, but our funding and our business situation behooves us to fund these top 3 customer journeys slash value streams. And now we're going to design how we work and where the funding goes. And that's a strategy, right? And where our teams go and how our teams align and drive work based on the customer.
Well, in that sense, a value stream is going to be a manifestation of the customer journey then. I like that.
Love Absolutely. It. Nice. I love it. For my part, a big takeaway today, well, first I'll say I wanted to cheer But I didn't want to interrupt Sanjeev, but I wanted to cheer loudly when early on he talked about the demise of the project model. it's not the first time I've heard that or said it myself, but boy, it is a struggle really to change that mindset and something we still see in our work today. But I think it really is an important a really important switch for people to make, to thinking about value streams instead of projects. And so I really appreciate the concepts in this book, Sanjeev, from PMO to VMO, and how they help enable that mindset change for companies. So I really appreciate you taking the time with us today. Do you have any final comments on your part? Anything else you wanted to address today? And if not, then please make sure to tell our listeners more about how to contact you and how they can work with LifeSpeed.
Thank you, Aaron. So no final comments, except that the future is bright. I know we've all been through a dark time with the pandemic, and it's not over yet. But, you know, things are, there's always a silver lining, and we're starting to see that as we sort of filter back to working in person or just continue to work in a different way. Many of us, ourselves included, have changed how we work, how we run our businesses. So I see, you know, bright times ahead. So that's a message of hope and optimism that I would want to send out to everybody out there. And then the best way to contact us is by going to our website. It's LightSpeed, LITHE, speed, SPED.com. And you can find out how to work, engage with us. The book itself, From PMO to VMO, is available on Amazon, and an audio version is available on Audible through Amazon as well.
Awesome. Thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us today, Sanjeev. I hope we can have you back on a future episode too. There's so much more I'm sure that we can talk about. And it's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Appreciate the opportunity, both Aaron and David. Good to see you.
Likewise. Good to see you
too. Take care.
Thanks for joining us on the Scaling Tech Podcast, where we help you manage your growing engineering team. Brought to you by agilityfeet.com, experts in staffing engineering teams in Latin America for clients globally. For more information on today's episode and to submit your ideas for future guests, please visit scalingtechpod.com.